It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We believe in America, we believe in our future, and we are ready to fight for it. And I am ready to go to Washington and fight for you.
And the people of Texas rendered a verdict that we want a future with more jobs and more security and more freedom.
We didn't accept government incompetence in Tallahassee, and we're not going to accept it in D.C. I will not accept it as your new U.S. Senator.
This country moving on the right track.
I think the entire country has heard Tennessee loud and clear.
I want to thank all Hoosiers for giving me a resounding victory, putting your faith in me, and I will not let you down. I promise that.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Thanks to Fox for that little montage. It was a big night last night in the Senate for Republicans. They picked up 3 seats so far and possibly 2 more. Really pretty interesting stuff, as you know, if you watched it, and I bet you did. I kind of bet you did. The Josh Hawley win in St. Louis against Claire McCaskill was an upset for the Democrats. And so was, of course, Mike Scott taking over from Bill Nelson in Florida. And now we're waiting to see races that are still pending in Montana and also Arizona. Those races are still hanging in the balance. Ken Cuccinelli is going to join us in just a few minutes, and we'll get an update on that. So the Senate Republicans have picked up 3 seats and possibly two more, that's amazing. We're going to talk about the implications of that with Ken when he joins us. In terms of the House, the Democrats picked up 34 seats. They needed 24. So Nancy Pelosi will be our next speaker. She's quite happy about it. Let's listen.
Today is more than about Democrats and Republicans. It's about restoring the Constitution's checks and balances to the Trump administration. It's about stopping the GOP and Mitch McConnell's assaults on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act. We will have accountability. In stark contrast to the GOP Congress, a Democratic Congress will be led with transparency and openness. The American people want peace. They want results.
Nancy Pelosi, next Speaker of the House. The American people want peace. Peace. Let's just talk about that word first. Well, I don't think the Democrats are already planning subpoenas for President Trump. They're going to stir the coals on the Russia investigation because surely there must be something there. They're going to reopen investigations. They're going to ask for the president's tax returns. They're going to make his life even more miserable than it was the last 2 years. There's no question about it. They will make the lives of conservatives, Freedom Caucus members, absolutely miserable. Can you imagine the congressman from California, Devin Nunes? They'll make his life miserable. And the thing that I worry about, honestly, is that it will be so hard and so difficult that good people will not run again or they'll resign. I mean, that's not impossible, and I'm sure they'd be happy to do that. When she brags about we will have accountability, she doesn't say we will be accountable. They always claim they make each other accountable, but they're not. They're accountable to nothing. So this will be, Maxine Waters in charge of finance and Adam Schiff in charge of the Intelligence Committee instead of Devin Nunes. Those just two. We'll see. I mean, it's going to fasten your seatbelt. It's going to be a pretty ugly ride, I think. I know that some think that this is going to be a good thing because it will possibly set a, it'll make the lines sharper between the left and what we think is sanity, right? Sanity. I mean, sanity doesn't waver. There is a bar, a line. And that it will make the contrast, just like in the Kavanaugh hearings, when you see how crazy the House is. But I have to say, because every single race last night, almost every single one, where conservatives won, they won by a point, 0.5, 0.7, 0.8. Now, there are exceptions, Josh Hawley and others, and we'll get into that. They won by very little. It could have gone either way. And with the shifting demographic in this country, with the fact that we don't have a sealed border, and now with this House, we will not get a sealed border. We will loosen up voting rights. In Florida last night, as a matter of fact, they passed an amendment or a referendum amendment to the Constitution that would allow felons to vote. That's 1.5 million. That's enough for any leftist to win. So this is, and there's a move, one of the big pushes under Jared Kushner in the Trump administration is for rights of, we'll get into this, prison reform sentencing. And part of that is restoring voter rights. So the trends are not good, shall I just say? So I don't know. I can't imagine that this is going to be a good thing for the country. And I think it's certainly a sad day for President Trump, even though he's not going to say that. But I'm just telling you, this is what happened. Now, the thing of it is, it wasn't a blue wave, that's for sure. The Democrats did not sweep. In fact, I'm hearing that a lot of the progressives, in fact, I had a list of them, if I could find it. You might not know their names, but a whole ton of really leftist progressives did not win. It was a good night for Democrats, but the progressive movement, not so much. And in fact, let's just mention that their number one star was Beto. I'm supposed to say Beto. Michael Francis, I think his name is. Robert Francis. Beto O'Rourke just barely lost to Ted Cruz. It was by a point or less. And so when Beto stood up to give his concession speech, this is what came out of his mouth. Let's listen.
I want to thank this amazing campaign of people, not a dime from a single PAC, all people, all the time, in every single part of Texas. All of you, showing the country how you do this. I'm so proud of you guys.
Yeah, so the F word, and MSNBC carried it and then apologized later, but that's who almost won in Texas, the punk rocker Beto, Robert Francis O'Rourke, who could not get into the Hispanic conference when he was serving in the Texas legislature because he wasn't Hispanic. But he is now, of course, they think he is. And so, and you know, I think the Hollywood and the left poured $60 million into that race. That's just amazing. That's the untold story, is the amount of money raised by the left. You know, they formed a PAC, like a GoFundMe sort of page, where people could just pour money in, and that's one of the reasons they had so much money for different candidates this year. But and, of course, the Republicans in the House. I'm going to talk about that in just a second. Let me give you some more just interesting news. Fox News had a report this morning about the kinds of people that are now serving. Let's listen.
Good morning. A series of firsts for newly elected lawmakers across the nation. Colorado will soon have the first openly gay governor, Democrat Jared Polis, defeating Republican Walker Stapleton. Polis is a five-term congressman and technology entrepreneur. He takes over for Governor John Hickenlooper, who reached a three-term limit. In Tennessee, a woman will represent the state in the U.S. Senate for the first time. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn helping the GOP keep a majority in the Senate, beating out former Democratic Governor Phil Bredesen. Retiring Senator Bob Corker's seat stays red. And a billionaire Democrat becomes the wealthiest governor in American history. Governor-elect J.B. Pritzker in Illinois pouring more than $171 million of his own money into his campaign. Pritzker, worth an estimated $3.4 billion, is the heir to the Hyatt Hotel's fortune. And 29-year-old Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is now the youngest woman ever elected to Congress. The Democratic Socialist shocked the political world, defeating Congressman Joe Crowley in a New York primary back in June. The youngest person ever elected to Congress was just 22 years old back in 1797. Ocasio-Cortez is just one of more than 100 women elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. That's the most there's ever been.
All right. Thanks to Fox for that report. And speaking of Illinois, Pritzker, of course, is the left of the left. He's going to be the new governor. Illinois is becoming California. It's been on that track for a while. And so two conservatives in the county of DuPage. DuPage is west of Chicago. I know it well. I raised my kids in DuPage County. That's where Wheaton College is. And Peter Roskam and Randy Holcomb, who I both know very well, lost. Both of them lost because DuPage County has been overrun. The demographic has been changed. So there you go. That's Illinois. There are a few seats other. I can't, you know, there's like 438 seats, so I can't talk about all of them. I'm sure you know that. We'll be getting more information as time goes by. In Virginia, I have to just say, Congressman Dave Brat was ahead a lot of the night. He and Abigail Spanberger in the 7th District went back and forth. And finally, Abigail Spanberger prevailed, supported by Emily's List, you know, a rabid abortionist, abortion supporter. Dave Brat, a champion of the Freedom Caucus, a champion to conservatives for sure. But let me just tell you, even Fox last night admitted on the air that the rhinos in the House are happy that he lost. They're happy, which brings me to something else. You have to see that the Senate, if you were to analyze this, the Senate in the Kavanaugh hearings stepped up to the plate. You know, Chuck Grassley actually fought back, and you saw members of that Judiciary Committee get a spine. And you saw them fight back. And people could see very clearly what it is we're up against in this country, a leftist mob, whether it's in a Senate committee room or on a street in Seattle, Washington. And so they stood up, and people understood how Kavanaugh was being slandered. And I really do think there's no question that's the reason why so many Republican senators prevail and candidates in this race. But in the House, did anyone see Paul Ryan going out and defending Brett Kavanaugh or making anything or talking about the left and do we need to fight or any of his crew members, his leadership team? Did they talk about, did they champion a wall when they could? No, they didn't. They've done nothing on immigration except what they wanted to do was bad things on immigration. The House is probably, you can lay squarely on the shoulders of Paul Ryan's leadership team, the reason why nothing was done on immigration, because they could have pushed through a very good bill. And so did you see them defunding Planned Parenthood? No. They talk about it, but they never do it. And they did not do it. And when they could, they did not do it. So the Republican leadership, in addition to not leading and doing nothing, basically, except Paul Ryan was always very quick to criticize President Trump. He did that. He's always faithful to do that. But not to really actually do anything in the House. The other thing is that the PAC that supports incumbents in the House did not support conservatives. And you remember that they actually, in the week to go, they went after Steve King in Iowa, removing their funding. I think it's Steve Stivers out of Ohio, who is the head of the committee that funds these races. And a friend of mine, an Ohio political consultant, told me that Stivers had spent a ton of money on his own reelection in a district where he was going to win anyway. But they didn't give money, hardly any. In fact, they announced that they were running short. So people like Dave Brat and others who were conservatives were out there on a limb by themselves. So if you wonder why the House Republicans didn't do so well last night, you can actually lay the blame on current House leadership. I'm happy to do that. Let me give you some good news. The Freedom Caucus, they lost Dave Brat. That's a huge loss, really indescribable. But they did pick up, at least potentially pick up, 11 new members through their PAC, through people that they were supporting around the country who have prevailed. So that's a good thing. And a lot of the Rhino Republicans did not get reelected, like Pete Sessions, like Virginia. Can't think of her name, but in the district in Virginia that the leadership poured a ton of money into her race and she lost. So there's some mixed news. But when we come back, Ken Cuccinelli will join me and we'll talk about the Senate because he's going to know more than I do. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Our concern about 13 Reasons Why has not diminished. If you've signed the AFA petition to Netflix CEO Reed Hastings, then you've probably heard the story of Anna Bright, who killed herself after binge-watching the show. But did you know she wasn't the first, nor the last? Other young people have been influenced by this program and have taken their own lives. Netflix says they want to stimulate conversations about taboo topics like teen suicide, but they still refuse to have a conversation with the American Family Association about the dangers of their show. Please pray that God will change Mr. Hastings' mind so that he pulls 13 Reasons Why before another life is lost. Look for the AFA Action Alerts with information you can email and share on social media so that others can sign the petition too by visiting afa.net. Every vulnerable teen is another reason why.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The pundits are still trying to figure out what happened in Tuesday's midterm elections, but I think there's a strong consensus whatever happened was weird. There does not seem to be much rhyme or reason as to who won or why. The Democrats took control of the House, but the Republicans not only held on to the Senate, they solidified their majority. There is one working theory, that voters were repulsed by how Democrats treated Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Democrats in battleground states who voted against Kavanaugh lost their races. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who was the lone Democrat who supported Kavanaugh, won re-election. Losses aside, do not expect a kinder or gentler Democrat party. House Democrats are on the warpath, and Nancy Pelosi is leading the charge. The fight for 2020 has already started, so you better buckle up, America. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And Sandy Rios back with you. The president is going to give a press conference this morning at 11, I believe, Eastern Standard Time. And this just in my box. I just told you that Nancy Pelosi is, you know, bragging, and so is Maxine Waters about all these investigations. This is what President Trump just tweeted a minute ago. If the Democrats think they're going to waste taxpayer money investigating us at the House level, then we will likewise be forced to consider investigating them for all the leaks of classified information and much else at the Senate level. Two can play that game. So the president's going to fight back. Oh, is that a surprise? He always does. Well, I told you in the Senate, the Republicans picked up three seats and they may pick up two more. Ken Cuccinelli knows all about this. He's the head of the Senate Conservatives Fund, and he joins us this morning. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Did you get any sleep?
Very, very, very little.
Yeah, it was a short night. It was a short night. And it's not over yet. Let's talk about what's pending, just because I want to start there. Tell us about what's happening in Montana.
Sure. So Montana is the main watch point, though Arizona is out there too. Arizona has a real cluster in some of their vote count operations, they're going to have a big chunk of votes that are just going to take a while to come in, Maricopa area and so forth in Arizona. So while Martha McSally, the Republican, has about a 1% lead there with 3/4 of the vote in, don't be looking for your, for those of you watching online, don't be looking for that to tick up real quick. That could be a long stall. Montana, Matt Rosendale is still ahead by 2,000 votes with 95% of the vote counted. The concern that I have is that the areas that are out lean more Democrat. So, you know, Tester's going to creep up on him. And the question is, will he pass Matt, who's a solid libertarian-type conservative, a liberty-minded conservative is probably the best way to put it, which is a perfect fit for Montana. But that is still a live possibility. I think if you were to lay money down, you'd probably say Martha McSally wins Arizona. And if you made me bet, I'd probably have to say that our candidate, the Senate Conservatives Fund, literally put more monetary support into Matt Rosendale than any other candidate, that he looks like he is going to have a hard time holding on here with the vote that's outstanding. But I do think this race is going to end with one candidate leading the other by a vote count that is in the hundreds, not thousands.
You know,
very, very, very close finish in Montana. And last week, by the way, a lot of people don't know this, the Libertarian candidate got out and endorsed Matt Rosendale because of some of the dirty tactics some folks, presumably Democrats, were using in the mail to try to fool voters. And the Libertarian got really ticked off about it because Matt Rosendale was the target of it. And he got out and endorsed Matt. And that was critical here. Montana has a significant Libertarian population, and the guy still got a bunch of votes. But had he not dropped out and endorsed Matt, I don't think we'd be looking at him ahead here at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time.
Hey, I want to drop in another question that's not related to the Senate necessarily, but I do wonder, Ken, with all of these races, so many of them across the board, whether it's governors or senators or, you know, members of the House, so close, 1 point, 0.5 points, point, yeah. You know, tenth yeah. of a point. Will there be a massive amount of recounts and contested races, you think?
There'll be a significant number of them, but having been in and managed recounts in Virginia, with the way votes are tabulated now and the way voting is, it's really a retabulation more than a recount. I mean, you don't have human beings sitting around counting. In Virginia, we fill out an optical scan sheet. It goes into a scanner. It shows us our vote, and we're done. If there's a recount, what's done is the machines are recounted. In my recount race, the move in votes was not ballots. It was a human transposition of numbers in a precinct from 78 to 87, that sort of thing. Though I will tell you that it went through 4 reviews by both parties before Wow. that transposition of numbers was caught. And those are the kinds of errors you see. And true error is random, not to put my engineer hat on with you, but so don't expect or count on a lot of these recounts to change outcomes. Even in the close races, the outcomes tend to hold up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, all right, let's talk about the 3 wins for Republicans. And I'm guessing the one in Missouri is the one that was the sweetest moment for you, Josh Hawley defeating Claire McCaskill, and not by a slim margin. Actually, was it, what, 6 points? Something like that.
6 points. He, by the standards of an incumbent, he thumped her pretty good. And, you know, that was a big win for Senate Conservatives Fund and for conservatives. And I know your audience is basically conservative, so let me give you this good news. Both Republican caucuses, House and Senate, got notably more conservative last night. Both of them. I mean, you added, and by the way, the some of the replacements, like Marsha Blackburn, replaced sanctimonious Bob Corker. The sanctimony level of the U.S. Senate with the departure of Flake and Bob Corker and the passing of John McCain in 2018, the sanctimony level of the Senate is dropping precipitously. And Marsha Blackburn may be the most conservative woman ever in the Senate. So that's a real upgrade in Tennessee. Obviously, Ted Cruz hung on in Texas. That was a big deal. And while, as a conservative, I'm not terribly excited about Martha McSally, if she holds on and wins, she will be better than Jeff Flake was, especially from the president's perspective. And then you add Josh Hawley. This is a guy who was fighting religious liberty cases as a private lawyer before he ever ran for attorney general. I mean, this is an all-star for us. And then Mike Braun is, again, another addition of a conservative to the Senate caucus there in Indiana. And while I'm not under any illusions that Rick Scott out of Florida is going to be charging the barricades with Mike Lee, Rand Paul, and Ted Cruz, nonetheless, he is a little more on the right side of that caucus. And then, of course, if Matt Rosendale hangs on, you add him to the mix as well. It's a really good night, not just for Republicans, but for conservatives, for our movement, for what we believe.
Yeah.
It would be nice if we could see movement in the leadership on the Senate side, but I don't think we're going to see that. However, on the House side, the House leadership really owns a lot of the responsibility for the losses there. Mm-hmm. And it is appropriate for you and me and everybody listening to spend the next week calling our congressmen and women, or if we're not in a Republican district anymore, the nearest one, and haranguing them to support Jim Jordan for minority leader. That is a very legitimate placement of the blame. They did nothing in the House except for the tax bill. And the Senate, you might say, got lucky. They haven't done much legislatively other than the tax bill. But one of the most important things they do, judge appointments, exploded on the news scene from July right through into October. And so everybody has Kavanaugh fresh on the mind. And look, Joe Manchin, I talked to Patrick Morrissey last night, another Senate Conservatives Fund candidate, Attorney General of West Virginia. He kept Joe Manchin under 50%, but he believes the one thing he couldn't do anything about is Manchin voting for Kavanaugh,
yes,
even though
exactly.
It was a throwaway vote for Manchin. It saved him.
I think so too.
He was the only Democrat
mm-hmm.
to vote, and it tricked enough people in West Virginia that it saved him.
Yeah.
So Donnelly didn't vote for him. That didn't save him. Heidi Heitkamp didn't vote for him. Claire McCaskill. All those folks went the other way, and they're gone.
Hey, I would love to know just your thoughts. John James was ahead so much of the evening last night in Michigan, ahead of Debbie Stabenow.
Yeah,
and
was.
I actually thought he might pull it out. He didn't really have much help as far as I know. The president didn't go to Michigan, did he?
No, the president did campaign. You know, John James is interesting with respect to the president. For your listeners who don't know, he's a two-tour combat vet, West Point grad. He's an African-American conservative who really took the fight to the Democrats for the black vote. I mean, he ran ads saying, look, the Democrats care about black votes, but not about black folks. And he's right. But, you know, you and I can't credibly carry that message. Well, he sure as heck can. And he did. You know, the fact that he can is one thing. The fact that he did is quite another. And he did lead for a lot of the night, but it's like how Virginia counts. Northern Virginia comes in late and is the biggest block, and the later votes were swinging towards Stabenow, and that held up. Now, he did very respectably. He ended up at 46%, and I think a lot of us would like to see John James be somebody who sticks around for the future. He is a real winner.
Yes.
Doing
that almost all on his own
yesterday, but he is. I hope he isn't going away.
Yeah, me too.
And we should all pray for that. But
hey,
he has a lot to offer.
Ken, all right. So the Republicans have gained seats in the House, Senate, and as we said, it's going to be a more conservative, at least caucus, at least slightly, and even maybe more if they pick up two more seats. So I'm just curious. Do you think that the 2019 Senate will come back energized. Will this new body come back? Will that manifest itself in some really good steps? And what do you think they might be?
No. I think that under the quote leadership, it's really the surrendership of Mitch McConnell. We're going to be wringing our hands about getting them to find their backbone again against Nancy Pelosi in the House. And, Mitch McConnell is a natural surrenderer. And we're going to see that reassert itself as the Democrats come in to the House. And unfortunately, if I'm wrong about that, it'll be a monumental shift in behavior and attitude of the entire Republican leadership in the Senate, including Mitch McConnell, John Cornyn, John Thune, sad to say, John Barrasso, sad to say.
I know. It's like they're on a sedative
Blunt,
or something.
Not surprising. But I hope that Josh Hawley's conservative stature drags Roy Blunt to the right. I was hoping Patrick Morrissey would win in West Virginia to drag Shelley Moore Capito to the right.
Yeah.
But we got one of those. We got Josh. Patrick didn't quite get there. And I would say that on the Senate side, some of our candidates who didn't quite get there, you mentioned John James, but also Patrick Morrissey, it was really an issue of enough funding. Now, we were each of their largest outside source of cash, Senate Conservatives Fund, yet they didn't get the Republican establishment support that holds the keys to the NRSC and Mitch McConnell's super PAC and so forth. And that made a big difference. The Democrats, when you look at the amount of money raised in this cycle, it is astonishing what the motivated radical left did in fundraising. And let's not kid ourselves, that's where it came from. And they, you give them their credit. They put their money where their mouth was, and their torches and their pitchforks and everything else. And it particularly paid off in the House, but it also helped people like Joe Manchin and Debbie Stabenow survive. Mm. And it may yet save John Tester. We'll see. And Jackie Rosen beat Dean Heller in Nevada, the one Republican incumbent loss in the Senate. And again, not a loss for conservatives. But a loss to the caucus. So,
speaking of caucuses, Ken, I heard something this morning that you might not have heard yet, and that is that the Freedom Caucus has potentially, there's a great loss in Virginia with Dave Brat and I think Rod Blum in Iowa. But the Freedom Caucus PAC has the potential of adding, they've had 11 victories of the candidates that they supported, and so they are.
Yeah, the House Freedom Fund went 11 for 11 in open seats.
Yeah,
11
yeah.
for 11
yes,
on
exactly.
a night like last night. So, I mean, if that doesn't tell you that principles win, you're right. Dave Brat was, in my view, the most painful loss in the entire country last night.
Yeah.
And then the only other Freedom Caucus member to lose was Rod Blum in Iowa. All the others hung on, including Scott Perry in Pennsylvania, which is tough territory. He's like a Dave Brat in Pennsylvania. But they added a bunch of new members. The Freedom Caucus is going to go from about a sixth of the Republican caucus to about probably more than a fifth of the Republican caucus.
Well, and
overnight.
Yeah, and you can hear the music, so we're going to have to go. But and as I understand it, I can see a lot of the rhinos are not returning. Why, Pete Sessions in Texas, Barbara Comstock.
Right, and Roskam in Illinois. Yes, that, the House caucus got more conservative, too. So
yeah.
That's good news.
Yeah, it's all very good news. All right, well, listen, Ken, thanks for all of your hard work. A lot of this is your hard work, you know that. And so we thank you for that. And so hope to see you
glad
soon.
To do
and
it.
Thanks for joining me this morning on such a short night's sleep. We'll talk to you soon.
See you, Sandy.
Okay, Sandy Rios in the morning. Oh, we're going to open the phone lines, 888-589-8840, 888-589-8840. So what are you seeing in your state that you want to talk to me about? Because I don't know everything. I need your help. 888-589-8840.
but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The 14th Amendment says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. The phrase, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, was clearly formed as a limitation on who would be granted citizenship due to being born on American soil. We know this because the children born to foreign diplomats in America are not granted U.S. citizenship. The children of illegal aliens are no more subject to the U.S. jurisdiction than the children of foreign diplomats.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Supreme Court has accepted a case that would be easy to settle if we were still using the Constitution given to us by the founders rather than the one mangled by the courts. The case has to do with the Bladensburg Cross erected in 1925 to honor 49 soldiers who died during World War I. The Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that the cross must come down because it violates the First Amendment, but it's the other way around. It's the Fourth Circuit which violated the Constitution. The federal government is forbidden by the First Amendment to do anything that would prohibit the free exercise of religion. But if the Supreme Court rules against the cross, that's exactly what it would be doing. In that case, the Supreme Court would be violating the Constitution, not the American Legion.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
80% of the time, an abortion-minded mother who views an ultrasound or sonogram of her baby will choose life. Here's the story of Candace.
The sonogram sealed the deal for me. My baby was like this tiny little spectrum of hope. And I saw his heart beating on the screen. And knowing that there's life growing inside, I mean, that sonogram changed my life. I went from just Candace to mom. Thank you to everybody that has given these gifts. You guys are giving more than money. You guys are giving love.
There are currently preborn centers which do not have an ultrasound machine. Would you sponsor a machine today? Dial pound 250 and say keyword baby. That's pound 250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Your love could save a life.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, American voters gaveth and tooketh away from President Trump. They rewarded him and Senate Republicans for fighting for Brett Kavanaugh, increasing its GOP caucus's numbers and conservative cohort. By contrast, the House Republican leadership's fecklessness contributed to the electorate's decision to replace 35 GOP legislators with Democrats, many of them self-described centrists. If there's any silver lining, it is that conservatives will be more influential in the new House minority, which means that elections to be held next week may prove extraordinarily important for both Mr. Trump and America. If Republican lawmakers properly respond to 2018's lessons, they will repudiate and replace their existing leaders with scrappy conservative ones. By so doing, they may be able to forge winning bipartisan coalitions behind robust policies favored by President Trump and that are likely to be rewarded by voters in 2020. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Okay, we're going to go to the phone lines here in just a second. But some of you are commenting online, so let me just mention a few of these. This is from Yvonne. She's in Illinois, and she said she refused to vote for Bruce Rauner, who was the Republican candidate, after he shut down our local pregnancy center. He was going to force them to advertise abortion, and they refused. And so she said, I just couldn't vote, and that's probably why he lost. And it's true. Rauner has governed. He was a Republican. He was a big businessman who started moving to the left and just kept moving to the left more and more. And so that is why Pritzker, who's terrible, that's part of what contributed to him winning. This is from Barb, who says basically that we need to pray for she feels like prayer was answered in this election. Of course it was. There are some really good things about this election. And she said we need to pray for those that are on the left, that they come to Christ, because that's really the only way that things are really going to change. And she's right about that. She said we need not be discouraged, just keep on praying, and having done so, pray some more. In Dr. Dobson's interview with Billy Graham's grandson this morning about his new book, he said his grandfather had one regret. He wished he had prayed more and preached less. He admonished his grandson to keep learning Scripture and to pray. Keep on doing what he's called you to do. Thank you, Barb. That's sweet and very encouraging. And then one last one. Here's from Josh. Josh writes me a lot. He started out being polite. Now kind of the gloves are off. I hear you, Josh. It's okay. I wish you and I could talk in person. He said, you lost. We won. Sure, you landed a few stingers. And he goes on to enumerate how horrible those stingers were. But look what we achieved. We won back the House. Finally, there will be congressional oversight for a presidential administration in dire need of it. We beat your guy, Dave Brat. Oh, that one was satisfying. You accused his opponent, Abigail Spanberger, a former CIA operative, of an affiliation with a Muslim school you call Terror High. Actually, Josh, it was Chuck Schumer who labeled it Terror High. Here in Massachusetts, ballot question 3 about protecting transgender rights won by 2-1 margin. So much for the fear-mongering you and Andrew Beckwith tried to engage in recently. Of course, ballot 3 has to do with transgenders using bathrooms and all their rights. And Andrew was kind of optimistic that even Massachusetts would withdraw that. But hey, Josh, you're happy about that. I don't get that. Josh has a child, and I maybe it's a boy. I don't know. Josh, if you've heard the stories about what's happening to little girls going into bathrooms like in Target, and men preying on them because they can go to those bathrooms. And I don't quite understand you as a dad. Maybe you're just not old enough yet. Josh is very smart. He teaches at least a junior college, if not a college. And he's just, let's see. And now on to 2020. I'm looking forward to going door to door in swing states and bringing my 7-month-old. I will tell people I canvass that if we vote out this stain on our history in 2020, then my child won't have to have any memory of him being president. This will fuel me to defeat you and the people who share your ideology every day. You know, Josh, I was just watching a series on Netflix called Spies of Warsaw. It's just excellent. For those of you, it's not a family-friendly thing, and it's not PG. So don't go out and look at it and then say, I'm shocked Sandy watched this. It's about war and espionage, and so it's not a smooth piece. But the main character is a French officer who was fighting with the Polish resistance, and he says something in one of the last scenes. He's eating dinner, and they're right in the middle. The Germans are getting ready to invade. The Nazis are, but they don't know that. But he thinks they are. He's been trying to warn the Polish leadership, but they won't listen to him. And he's sitting at a table with his sister and her boyfriend and other people. And he said, we live as though we think that this life that we love and enjoy is going to last forever. But it isn't. And so, Josh, I just say to you, you're probably like me, enjoying a really good life where you have enough resources. You're enjoying your child, your baby, your family. I'm too. I'm so blessed. But do not think that this life that you enjoy is going to last forever if you make the wrong choices. I'm glad you're listening to me, and that's all I have to say to you today. But let me go back to the phones now. Let's go to Jacob in Alabama. Good morning, Jacob.
Yes, how are you, Sandy?
I'm good. Good.
Oh, good. You're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you a question and make a statement as well. Who won the race in Georgia for the governor? And I wanted to add this, too. I was in Georgia the first week in October, and that lady that was running, she was in a gay pride parade. And it's got to the point now where it's judgment begins at the house of God. He's letting us see who these people really are, because we're going to be judged by the choices that we make in that voting booth. And she's, like I said, she's in a gay pride parade. And it's like, you know, we're seeing evil, we're seeing the difference between sheep and goats, the devil and God, and us as people in the body of Christ are getting a an opportunity to make the right choice, although God is not forcing us. He's presenting these things, and we will be judged.
Yeah, I think so. And let me just say a word about that. You're absolutely right. Stacey Abrams is the candidate's name, and let me first of all update you as best I can. That race is so close, she is behind, but she's not conceding. Brian Kemp is still ahead. They're counting. She feels like there are more votes for her in some more friendly counties. And so that race hasn't been declared yet, although I think, yeah, so I'll just leave it with that. Stacey Abrams, of course, did not run on being a lesbian. I think a lot of people in Georgia don't know she is. The only reason I have any hint about that is because she was pictured on a Lesbians Who Tech website, and then that was scrubbed. So that came to my attention from a black friend of mine. So I'm just saying, yeah, that's kind of where she stands. Brian Kemp is the current, I believe, Secretary of State there. So he is ahead, Jacob, but we don't know what's going to happen. And what you just said reminds me of something. I'm shy. Sorry, I'm full of stories this morning, but I remember when I was president of CWA, which I mention often, but I have to because that's a huge part of my life experience. We were fighting a tremendous battle about, at the time, it sounds so simple compared to the acceleration of us moving to the godless left. We were trying to stave off gay marriage, and it was a real battle, and I was on the front lines of that, and I'd spent, I can tell you, not a few months and days and years of my life, or at least months of my life, working on that. And something had happened, and I was extremely discouraged. I was in the gym working out, and my phone rang, and it was Judge Moore from Alabama. And he said to me, Sandy, don't be discouraged. Don't you realize that the closer we get to the end, the more bold the evil one becomes? The more bold evil becomes because they know that their time is short, and so they become more bold. And so I've always remembered that. The worse it gets, don't be discouraged. That just means, you know, the end, meaning the end that God's going to bring about is coming because wickedness is getting more bold. And I think that that's true. Jacob, thank you so much. Let's go to Oklahoma. Jan, what's going on there?
Well, what's going on here is at least Oklahoma is still a red state, though our teachers' unions, the outside unions, are overtaking our teachers who sadly are not able to think through it. But what I wanted to talk about is Paul Ryan not seeking re-election and all the other Republican House members that did not seek re-election. I wish that there's some way that you can put up a scoreboard and follow them for the next 2 years to see what lobbyist groups they uh-huh. go to. Yeah. Our House, the Rhinos are rejoicing at what has occurred. And my heart breaks for Dave Brat. He was outstanding. But I think it will be fascinating to look to see where those retiring, not seeking re-election Republicans end up, though it is nice to see them gone. Yep. And I was encouraged by Ken Cuccinelli's assessment and yours a few minutes ago about what we did, because sometimes we focus on what we didn't.
Yeah, totally. It's totally true, Jan. And I'm one of the worst to look at the glass half empty sometimes. I was talking with Tim Wildman last night on our election special. The one thing, you know, I've been through this so many times, and I have learned I just cannot exaggerate. I can't pump you up falsely. I'm just not capable. I have to tell you like I think it is. I think we had some really good wins. Mean conservatives had some really good wins last night, and we should celebrate, but they were also very close. And I see the trends in the country changing. I see the attempt to bring in more people from other countries, to legalize them as fast as possible, or maybe not even not, because there doesn't seem to be much of a motivation to really observe the rule of law. And so I think we're going to see a country that changes. We lost by, meaning conservatives lost by such little margins in almost every single race. I think we have trouble ahead unless we have revival in this country in ways we can't imagine. I have a feeling this may be, honestly, if I had to say, I think this might be the last election where conservatives could prevail. Maybe in 2 years there might be another, but we're witnessing the change. There's no question about it. Let's go also to Laura in Oklahoma because she has some specifics to tell us. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Yes, I'm from Oklahoma as well, and I do agree that we did stay red last night. We had some great wins. There were a few that were some very narrow margins. But like you, unless we see a massive revival in this country and we return to the true values that our country was founded on, you might be dead on, that this is the last time we see this. And, you know, with the unfortunate loss to the House, I think that we're going to see time wasted, energy wasted, the wall stalled, DACA and all these other things that are pending just to be at a standstill, and a constant shift of blaming the president instead of blaming where it really needs to be.
Yeah, I think so, Laura. Yeah, interesting, very good comments. I wish we had more time. I need to go to Virginia to talk to Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm on a cell phone, so before my signal cuts out, I got to make this quick. Listen, Mr. Bratt did not lose. I want everybody listening to understand that. Mr. Bratt did not lose. He got messed over by the GOP General Assembly. They gerrymandered him out of Beaver Dam. He lost that. He lost Ashland is kind of, they're kind of liberal anyway, but he lost Beaver Dam. There was no way Spanberger could win in Beaver Dam. And he lost that. And
Oh, go ahead, Mark. You dropped out just for a second, but you're still there. Now we hear Goochlin, so pick it up.
Yeah, he had Goochlin, but, I mean, those were the two main areas that got Brett elected because they really came out for him. And I don't know, why would they... I'm trying to find out, why would they gerrymander? Whitman couldn't, I mean, not that he couldn't lose, but he wasn't going to lose. You saw about how much he won. He wasn't going to lose in a red district. They gerrymandered him.
Okay. Hey, Mark, I hate to cut you off, but we're running out of time, and I'll tell you why. Because they can't stand Dave Bratt because he's been a champion, and mostly, though, because he had the audacity to beat their fair-haired child, Eric Cantor. And so the Virginia Republican Party is not they're controlled by rhinos. And they have had the crosshairs on Dave Bratt for a long time. So last night they took him out. And that's why they gerrymandered his district. So that's the best answer I can give you. And let me go to Marty in Iowa. Marty, quickly if you can.
Sandy, thank you so much. I just wanted to say we all have Josh's in our world, the man who left you an email. And the thing that is so cool, you must be born again before you can enter the kingdom of God. And that is our whole point. We are Christians. We've seen some changes, and we're watching America falling apart. But we are called as Christians to be on our knees, like you said with James Dobson. This morning, we are called to be on our knees, and God is so beautiful. We have eternal life for those who have accepted Jesus Christ, and there's Joshes in our world that haven't done that yet. I was one of them until God came and got me, and that's what we're called to do, is to pray for our enemies.
Yeah.
And God wants nothing more than to bring them to a saving knowledge of His Son.
Marty, excellent. Very well said. A great way to end the show today. It's true. Josh, in case you missed it, because I talk about politics so much, the most important thing is to communicate that there is a God, and His purposes are so much greater than the things that are happening on this earth. And He gives us a future and a hope. And I'm glad you're listening, even if you don't like me, even if you disagree with everything I'm saying. I'm so grateful you're listening. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.